Day, Roger Wyland, Michael Johnson Jr., Hunter DePace back in our ESPN studios and joined by Gary Appel from SNY. And the big news, of course, the New York Mets over the last couple of days, losing out on Edwin Diaz, and yesterday Pete Alonso going to Baltimore. Gary, good morning, an absolute pleasure. How are you, my friend?
Always great to be with you, Roger. Michael, good to see you, speak with you guys. How's everything?
Yeah, we're good. We are good. The Mets fans aren't so good right now because they're wondering what's going up. And I think they feel like their roster's being blown up. And if that's what they're thinking, they're probably not wrong, Gary. What a whirlwind couple of days it's been here with Edwin Diaz gone and then yesterday Pete Alonso gone.
Well, listen, you have such emotional attachment to these guys. These are guys who have been with the organization for all these years. 2019, he came up into the big leagues. They acquired Edwin Diaz back in 2019. They've been such an integral part of what they have done. And then before that, Brandon Nimmo. So you talk about the core of this team. You know, those are three of the five main core pieces that are now gone. Lindor's still there. Soto's still there. But you have this great emotional attachment to these guys. I mean, Pete Alonso has been the heartbeat of this team since he burst onto the scene 7 years ago, and it's tough to replace 264 home runs and a guy who posts up every single day and night, 162 games each of the last 2 years. And so, yeah, this is a gut punch to the organization, certainly to the fan base. So I'll say it again, emotionally attached to these players. But listen, the Alonso thing hurt, there's no question, but I think the one that caught us more by surprise, because I don't think the Mets were going to go 5 years. They made that very clear. They were not going to go 5 years for Pete Alonso. And so, you know, Joel Sherman in the Post reported yesterday, they never actually made him an offer because 3 years was not going to get it done for Pete Alonso, and they were willing to let him walk for that. It was Edwin Diaz that was really the, I think, shocker here, because was it really just $3 million that separated the Mets and the Dodgers? How do you let Edwin Diaz go over $3 million? I think that's the thing that is more perplexing than Pete Alonso. But either way, this is going to be a new team next year. And I'll say this before I hand it back to you. The fact is they won 83 games last year. Over the final 3.5 months of the season, they were one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball. So something needed to change. Was this the thing that needed to change? That I'm not sure about. Because to me, the offense was one of the best in baseball down the stretch of the season. The thing that derailed this team was their pitching, specifically their starting pitching, and then their defense. And Pete was not a great defender at first base. We know that. So could they have simply addressed this by going out and gotten two frontline starting pitchers and then made little changes along the way? I think they could have, but I think they're looking at the long term here, and that's why they've made the changes that they've made.
All right, so where does David Stearns go from here? I mean, he's got some work to do here between now and spring training. What are names that we can throw out there to replace the likes of a Pete Alonso?
So you're not going to replace. There's nobody out there who's going to give you the production that Pete Alonso gave you last year. He had the second highest OPS of his career. He hit the 36, 38 homers, drove in 126 runs. I don't see anybody, including Cody Bellinger, who's going to replace those numbers. Now, what Bellinger would bring you is more versatility, better defense, somebody who could play the outfield, somebody who could play first base. I like the thought of Bellinger. I like the bat of Kyle Tucker. I think Kyle Tucker is somebody they should be in on right now. I know they don't want too many left-handed bats. That's one of the reasons they traded away Nimmo, brought in Marcus Semien. He's a right-handed bat. But I would go out and try to get Kyle Tucker. That's the name that, to me, makes a lot of sense. Whether they'll pony up 6 or 7 years, which is what it's going to take to sign Kyle Tucker, I don't know. There's reporting out there. I think Andy Martino or SNY Baseball Insider, you know, is reporting that they've reached out to the Cardinals about Wilson Contreras, who moved from behind the plate to play first base last year for the Cardinals. But those are, I just think, some of the names that, that I'm sure they're kicking the tires on. I still have great belief here in David Stearns. There's no way with Steve Cohen's pocketbook and desire to win that David Stearns is not going to make myriad moves here. They're going to make the Mets a World Series contending team when they open play on March 26th, I think it is. So there's a lot of work to be done. There are starting pitchers to be acquired. There's bullpen help to be acquired. There are bats to be acquired. But there's plenty of time to do it, and I think David Stearns is on the clock and on the hot seat right now.
Yeah, it's well said by you, Gary, and you mentioned the starting pitching, too, and you're rattling off a lot of names that I've been reading the same rumors and reports, too. You know, a guy over in Detroit, Tarik Skubal, is obviously arguably pound-for-pound the best pitcher in baseball up there with Paul Skeens, certainly in the American League. Do you think the Mets could be in a position with the moves that they've made and everything David Stearns has done to make a serious run at Tarik Skubal here in these winter meetings in this offseason?
Well, no question they have what it takes to acquire Skubal. First of all, he's only got 1 year left on his deal. So he's certainly somebody that a bunch of young players, young up-and-coming players, can get a deal done. So there's no question in my mind, are they willing to part with, and I think they are, the one guy they don't want to part with is Nolan McClain. He's a front-of-the-rotation starter. Will they part with Jonah Tong? They will. Will they part with Brandon Sproat? They will. So they have the pieces to get this done. You know, Freddie Peralta is also a very intriguing starting pitcher. He's only got $8 million due to him next year, so the price tag will be high, but Peralta's a guy I would definitely be going after. Edward Cabrera down in Miami is somebody who is on the block. I would love to see them get Alcantara, but I'm not sure they're going to trade Sandy Alcantara. But there are starting pitchers, and they have the pieces to get that done. I think there are a couple of guys they don't want to trade. They don't want to trade Nolan McClain, and they do not want to trade Carson Bench, who could end up as their opening day center fielder next year. And that's something we should hit on for just a moment, because there is a scenario where they are not going to make huge splashes this offseason, that they believe they've got guys down and just about ready to go that can be productive in 2026. And Carson Bench is one of those guys. He could potentially be their opening day center fielder.
Talking with SNY's Gary Apple here on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio. Gary, I want to circle back to Diaz because you're right. I think no one is terribly shocked over Alonso because they weren't going to give him a five-year deal. But what was it about Edwin Diaz? I mean, the money was comparable. Was there something internally that maybe Diaz was upset with within the organization that he wanted out? Did he want to go and try and win a world championship and thought the Dodgers gave him the best chance? I mean, there's something more to that story other than the money.
It would seem to be, because from all accounts, he never came back to the Mets and gave them a final chance, which is something you would figure if you want to stay with the organization. And the Mets had indicated after their original offer that there was room to go up on that. So I think you're right about it. Listen, I can only tell you what I've heard and what I read. Like, Mike Puma in the Post also put out there that he was upset on a couple of fronts. Number one, they fired their pitching coach, Jeremy Hefner, who's now down in Atlanta, who he was close with. And secondly, he was upset from what I heard. And again, I don't know if there's any volition to the story, that they did not alert him when they went out and signed Devin Williams. Not that they owed that to him. Why would they owe that to him? But that's a report that's out there. So were those things part of the equation that led him to say, you know what? They let Hefner go. They didn't let me know when they got Devin Williams. I'm going to the Dodgers. And those are possibilities. I have no idea. But I think you're right. I think there was more at play here than just the money. Listen, he's making more with the Dodgers. I don't think there's any deferred money with the Dodgers, and there was going to be considerable deferred money with the Mets. So maybe that played into the equation as well. But I think there were definitely factors here beyond this $3 million gap between what the Dodgers offered him and what the Mets offered him.
And now you're set, I guess, with Devin Williams as the closer. He had, you know, some shaky moments in New York last year with the Yankees for sure. How much confidence do you think the Mets have in handing the ball off to Devin Williams in a closer role next year?
Listen, he had a lot of shaky moments last year with the Yankees, right? His numbers were not very good. I think they have confidence in Devin Williams, and I do too. But I don't think that they need to and can stop there when it comes to the bullpen. I mean, I want them to go out and get Robert Suarez. He's the guy. Put him at the back end of that bullpen, and then you have Devin Williams and Robert Suarez, and A.J. Minter might not be ready for opening day, but he'll be back. You have Brooks Raley, who was lights out for them last year. You have a bunch of solid pieces there. That's where I would go. I think you need another big arm at the back of that bullpen. It can't just be, okay, let's assemble this bullpen, and then Devin Williams is our closer. I do believe Devin Williams can. He's had a year under his belt here in New York. I heard where he said when he first came here last year, he was completely flummoxed playing in New York City. He played his first game. He pitched in his first game. He said he didn't know how he was going to get back home. He didn't understand the nuances of the city and how you live here. And it can be daunting for a player who came from, right, Milwaukee and the smallest market in the big leagues. And all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to figure out how to navigate not just pitching and the pressure of pitching here, but how to live here. And so he's got that year under his belt. I think that is a big thing. But they need more. They need more at the back end than just Devin Williams. And listen, closers and relievers are very difficult to predict. As much as we're going to miss Edwin Diaz and the trumpets and Timmy Trumpet and the music when he came in and the job that he did, let's not forget, there were shaky moments with Edwin Diaz. He got hurt in the World Baseball Classic, missed the full season. When he first came here, he really struggled. He got popped for sticky stuff, right? So, you know, this hurts, no question. But is it overcomable? Absolutely. And I still have this confidence in David Stearns that he is going to make moves that are going to put the Mets in strong position going into the 2026 season.
Gary, one more from me here quick. How much pressure do you think, regardless of what moves the Mets make for, you know, a bat or two to improve this lineup, how much pressure do you think, as if it's not already there already, is on the big moneymaker Juan Soto heading into this 2026 season for the Mets?
Listen, Juan Soto is a lunch pail. As much as he gets all this money and he's got this huge contract, he is a lunch pail kind of guy. He comes to the ballpark, he plays, he doesn't want to talk about all the nonsense that goes on in the city and all of the pressure. He comes and he plays baseball, and he has proven that everywhere he's been. So I don't look at it like there's more pressure now on Juan Soto. He puts up numbers wherever he goes. Look at the back of the baseball card on Juan Soto. He gets there. He's an over 900 OPS guy. He's one of the greatest hitters the game has ever seen. And so I don't buy into there's more pressure on Juan Soto now. I think he shows up, he does his work, he plays, and he puts up numbers, and the track record shows that, the back of the baseball card shows that.
Well, the Mets are going to be in the news a lot more here, for sure, with David Stearns having some work to do with losing three, arguably the most popular players on that roster. Gary, really appreciate you joining us, kind of coming back to your old stomping grounds. For those who didn't know, Gary was the sports anchor at WNYT back in the day before I got here in 1986, and pleasure to have you back on the airways on the radio side here in the 518, my friend.
Always great to be with you guys. I miss the area. Don't get up there as much as I like, but great to be with you, and always here to add any insight that I can.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Keep
up the great work.
Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Stay well. Happy holidays.
Thank you. You too. Same to you.
Yep.
Gary Apple from SNY on the state of the New York Mets. We are back. Pete Doherty with us. Hello, Pete. Good morning. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. Talking to you from the cellar. I'm in last place in both outright and against the spread. It's just not been a good year for me picking wise.
Well, you know what? Let's get it better this week, Pete. Week 15. You know, have a sweep. Sweep the win. Win every game, every pick this week. How about that?
So do that for about 3 weeks, so I can get back into the race there.
All right. Well, let's see how it rolls tonight. Atlanta plus 5.5 at Tampa. I think everyone. I just read the paper. Everyone's got the Buccaneers in this game.
Yeah, the line's down to 4.5. Everybody took the Buccaneers. I just decided to be different and try to catch up, so I took the points.
Right.
I really think
all
Tampa right. Bay will probably roll, but I don't understand. 4.5 seems low to me the way Atlanta's been playing, but let's, you know, we'll just roll with it and see what happens. It's a, you know, decent game to watch. It could be a lot better, but could be worse. So I guess we'll tune in because there's not a whole lot else on right now.
All right, let's jump ahead to the Sunday action here, Week 15. Washington plus 2.5 at the Giants. I heard this morning Jaden Daniels will not play. I got the Giants winning this game. And then the Jets plus 11.5 in Jacksonville. I like Jacksonville to win, but maybe the Jets can keep it a little bit closer with the point spread than 11.5. But I do like the Giants on Sunday to beat Washington at home.
I like the Giants, too. Even if Daniels would play it, I kind of like the Giants. I just feel like the coming off the bye week, you know, they're playing pretty good football. And now they got a team that's at their level, maybe not as good as they are. I feel like they put it together at home and win the game behind Jackson Dart. I like Jacksonville. I just don't know if the Jets can score enough points, even though they're getting 11.5 to start with. I still don't think they can score enough points, especially if Tyrod Taylor doesn't play. So I'm going to give those 11.5.
Big game, obviously, Buffalo at New England. A lot riding on this one. The Patriots have won 10 in a row. They're at home. But I like the Bills. I got the Bills minus 1.5 winning in New England. And then Cleveland plus 7.5 in Chicago. I like the Bears with Cleveland an outside chance to make this thing a little bit closer than 7.5. But I got Buffalo winning in New England and the Bears with a win at home.
A lot of reasons to pick the Bills. I mean, they don't want to watch the Patriots celebrate a division title, you know, while they're on the field. The Bills really need the game a lot more, I think, than the Patriots. But all that said, I took the Patriots because the Patriots are the better team. I'm really surprised the Bills are favored here by 1.5. But I just think the Patriots are better. The Bills have shown some of their flaws, and they've overcome them the last 2 weeks. But this is a step up in competition for them. I think New England wins this game and clinches the AFC East, and then the Bills, we left to try to fight for a wild card spot.
All right, the Ravens minus 2.5 after the tough loss against the Steelers going to Cincinnati. Give me the Bengals. Give me Joe Burrow and the Bengals to win that game on Sunday. And I like Kansas City at home to beat the L.A. Chargers. I know the Chiefs are done, but I think they're going to pull out a victory here against L.A. on Sunday.
By the way, I didn't mean to ignore the Browns and Bears. I got the Bears. I got the Bears minus. I like Baltimore to win at Cincinnati. You know, at some point they've got to, I mean, there's too much talent in that team to be a 7-7 team or whatever they are right now. I don't understand. 6-7, I guess they are. I think they get it done, but I would certainly look for a high scoring game there. And I'm again, surprised at the lines. Kansas City favored by 5.5. That surprises me a bit. I do like the Chiefs, though. But it's, they're playing at home. Chargers coming off a Monday night game. But I can't give you a good reason why I'm taking the Chiefs, because every time you're taking them, when you think it's a game they should win, they don't want winning, and they're definitely out of the playoffs if they lose this one.
All right, Vegas at Philly. Eagles will take care of business there. Vegas not good. The line, though, that I bet on 12.5, and that's a lot. But I got Philly maybe getting this thing rolling a little bit, and they've struggled offensively, no doubt about that. And the quarterback can't have 5 turnovers like he did last week. Arizona plus 7 at Houston. I got Houston winning that game on Sunday.
Yeah, I have both home teams. I have the Eagles winning at home and probably even covering the 12.5. I wonder if the Eagles offense is capable of scoring that often. They're getting an awful lot of field goals, it seems like. And then I like Houston at home. Houston's still in the playoff race. And Arizona playing better, but the Cardinals are out of it. So you lean toward the teams that got something to play for. Let's go with the Texans.
Here's an intriguing matchup. Green Bay minus 2.5 at Denver. Broncos are home, man. They win close games, and they're at home, and they have a great home win-loss record this year. I'm going Broncos to beat the Packers, and then Detroit plus 4.5 at the Rams. Rams' best team in the NFL right now. I've got the Rams winning a home game against the Lions.
The Green Bay-Denver line is a line I don't quite understand. The Packers are awfully good. I know they offensively they haven't been stellar, but their defense is so good. I like Denver at home, and I'll take the 3 points there. And I do like the Rams at home. I keep waiting for Detroit to explode, but there's still too many holes defensively for the Lions. Should be a lot of points in this game. It's a game we're going to have access to here in the Capital Region. Let's go with the Rams, and we'll give the 4.5.
Yep, I'm with you there. Carolina, I like them to win in New Orleans. Carolina, -2.5. And San Francisco at home against Tennessee. 49ers are going to roll. The question is by how much. It's +13.5 for Tennessee. But I'm still going San Francisco there to win and cover.
Yeah, I like Carolina. They're genuinely in the playoff race now. Tough to win on the road sometimes, but they're playing New Orleans. It's a game the Panthers have to have, and they want to be considered a playoff contender, so I'll give the 2.5. Certainly like San Francisco at home coming off a bye. 13.5 is an awfully big number. Right now I'm giving the points. I could change. I might take the points, but you gotta like the 49ers here, especially having a week off.
Who is starting at quarterback, MJ, for Indianapolis this week?
Could it be Philip Rivers?
Are you kidding me? 44-year-old Philip Rivers might be the starting quarterback, and they're going to Seattle. Are you kidding me? I got Seattle, Pete, winning this game. Indianapolis +10.5. Give me Seattle. And I like Minnesota to win in Dallas. Minnesota +6.5. I got them winning in Dallas against the Cowboys.
Well, you know, there's reports going on. If this works with Philip Rivers, then maybe the Jets will bring Joe Namath back, see what they can do. They're obviously having quarterback problems. Maybe Roger Staubach can start for the Cowboys coming up. But you got to like Seattle. I mean, I really love the Philip Rivers story. I hope he does well. The Colts have a brutal schedule the last four games. I don't think they may not win any of those games, and it won't be Philip Rivers' fault. But, it's a desperation move. Why not try it? They can't do any worse. I mean, they're down two or three quarterbacks now. So, give it a shot. But let's just take Seattle -10.5, and that line's probably going to grow. And I do like Dallas at home. I'm surprised the line 6.5. That seems a bit much. But Vikings have not been consistent. The Cowboys have played their best football the second half of the season. They should get the win at home, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, well, is their wide receiver going to show up this week, MJ?
Your former wide receiver, George Pickens.
You want to see why they didn't like him in Pittsburgh? You saw that the last time the Cowboys played.
Yeah, I think the effort was in question. I will throw out there, not trying to defend him, he was injured going into the week. And if you watch, he was able to turn. Wasn't able to turn on some of the routes, but the deep ball, that's effort.
Yeah,
the deep ball was not good.
That's the George Pickens.
We haven't seen him yet.
That we knew and loved in
Pittsburgh.
Haven't seen him. That was George Pickens.
Yeah.
And speaking of Pittsburgh, I like the Steelers Monday night, even though the Dolphins team is really surprising a lot of people. Miami +3.5. I got the Steelers on Monday night, Pete.
I think most of us will have the Steelers on Monday night. All the Dolphins are playing much better. They certainly can be a spoiler. They have the Patriots coming up, and I know Bills fans are hoping they can come through there. Hey, concerning George Pickens, when he's spending too much time on social media. He should really spend more time looking at film. Richard Sherman really blasted him after the Thursday night game, and I thought it was justified. And what's Pickens do? He goes on social media and tries to respond. I just don't get involved with that. Play the game, watch the game films, develop some thick skin. Really, those are the worry about what people are thinking about them are the ones that are destined to fail. And I certainly see why the Steelers got rid of him.
Hey, and one more before I let you go as we wrap up the picks for week 15. I really like the hire by the Penn State Nittany Lions with Matt Campbell. I listened to his press conference the other night and look at his resume. I think that's a great hire for Penn State.
I would certainly call it a good hire. It's one of those things, Roger, where we don't have any choice. We have to like the hire because we can't change it. If we don't like it, it doesn't mean they're going to go out and get somebody else. I think it's a pretty good hire, especially the corner they painted themselves into. I think he's going to wind up doing well. The thing I'm happiest about is I believe he's going to keep Terry Smith on the staff, and he was the interim head coach, and he was an excellent recruiter and, you know, Penn State grad, so I think that was a good move. Hopefully he'll build up some good assistance here and make up for lost time and on the recruiting trail, but I still feel like this is kind of a lost year recruiting-wise. Maybe he can use the portal to make them respectable next year. But I think it's going to wind up, I hope, being a good hire. We'll see. But give them a couple years before they're thinking about winning a Big Ten title.
Yep, fair enough, Pete. Always a pleasure. I hope you get back on track. I hope you have a good week picking these games straight up and with the spread. Get back on track.
I'll try that. If I just knew who's picked a copy, but that kind of varies from week to week, so I get them out on my own.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Pete. Thanks for a few minutes, as always, my friend.
Okay, I'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Thank you, Pete. Pete Doherty, 20-plus years running the NFL picks in the Times Union. We're back at Dutch's Place on this Thursday edition, and we're staying on the air until 2 o'clock today, giving away New York Giants tickets against the Vikings. It's a 1 o'clock game, December the 21st at MetLife. They're lower bowl seats, so they're good seats. They are in the end zone, but they're lower bowl, and they come with a parking pass. You must register here at Dutch's Place to have a chance to win those tickets, and we will be giving them away today. And we'll announce the winner. We'll draw for the winner around 1:45. Josh Halji is the head coach of the Union Men's Hockey Program, and he always drops by here for a few minutes on the Thursday show to get updated on his team. And good morning, Coach. How are you?
Doing well. How about yourself?
We're good, man.
We're good.
Yeah, we're hanging out, giving away some Giants tickets here on the show today. So even though the Giants stink, it's the Giants.
Well, isn't Josh Halji in Minnesota? He's a Minnesota guy.
Are you a Vikings guy?
Vikings guy, aren't you?
I am a Vikings guy. That's my team.
There you go. Well, we're giving away Giants-Vikings tickets
for
December 21st
at
MetLife Stadium. So get a chance, Coach. Stop in the Dutch's Place and fill out an entry form.
Yeah.
So how did you look at the weekend? You had a tough one Friday night against Princeton, but then you bounced back and beat Quinnipiac on Saturday.
Yeah, it was the tale of two teams there for us. Friday, a disappointing effort. We've been pretty consistent this year. This is the first time we're maybe you're a little disappointed with the effort. And then Saturday you follow it up with maybe your best game of the season. So, good response, but a disappointing start to the weekend.
Yeah. So how does that happen? How does that work? I mean, is that puzzling as a coach? Because you think if you're going to lose the game, it would be to Quinnipiac, not to Princeton, but you lay an egg, I guess, and didn't play well. And then boy, you bounce back and come up with a huge win, on the home ice against Quinnipiac. In your mind, what happened?
I think it's just a lot leading up to what happened, you know, against Princeton. You have 2 weeks of, you know, trying to manage your body and maybe not pushing as hard as a coach as far as you're, you know, worried about the travel. You're worried about, you know, everything in Belfast, health, sickness, and maybe you take your foot off the gas a little bit. And, you know, when you do that, your habits and details slide a little bit. And it takes something like what happened on Friday to kind of snap you back in. And I thought Saturday a really good response.
So how did you handle Friday night? Are you getting after your team in a big way on Friday night, or do they know what happened and they just kind of take control of themselves here and turn things around?
Yeah, I think you definitely, we got into them a little bit, but they're, you know, they're all, you know, 21, 22-year-old men. Like they know when they have a disappointing effort. They wear it, you know, pretty hard, and I think it was humbling, and we got outworked, and, you know, give credit to Princeton, they played well, and we have to be better than that.
Coach, you head into a weekend where you're home at M&T Bank Center back-to-back against Alaska Fairbanks, but wanted to ask you, what do you expect for the atmosphere? We know it's a great game and a great event for a great cause with the teddy bear toss and the toy drive. What should fans expect there coming up on the Saturday game, Coach, teddy bear toss?
Yes, Saturday at 5 o'clock, you know, a great cause, an opportunity to give back to, you know, some of the less fortunate in the area. And I think for our guys, it's a huge weekend for us just to be ready and again for us as a team to, you know, be able to give back to someone.
Is what kind of matchup do you, is this? Talk about the, how you match up with this team on back-to-back nights.
Yeah, Alaska's playing really well. Coming in, they just, you know, they beat Quinnipiac in a shootout the last time they played them. They beat Clarkson and St. Lawrence, so they've had some success of recent. They're playing at a high level. They, you know, obviously compete extremely hard, and they're coming all the way from Alaska, so it's always a special time to have a team like that come here.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then this will wrap it up, right? That you don't play again until after the first of the year.
Yeah, so this for us, it's, you know, we've had a solid start, you know, 10-5-2 right now, and have a chance to kind of put a, you know, a bow on a pretty special first half, but you gotta have a good weekend here to, you know, make you feel good about your holiday and earn it.
Coach, what have you seen overall from the ECAC conference as a whole? Obviously, you guys 3-4-1. It's fair to say when looking at the standings, it's you know, you guys were able to take down Quinnipiac. There's a lot of parity, and it's competitive as ever. Fair to say, Coach, that it's going to be another competitive season. What's your early impressions of this ECAC conference here so far?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's for sure is you just don't really know what's going to happen on a weekend. I mean, everybody's beating everyone, and Dartmouth is off to a really strong start and kind of, you know, taking control. But after that, it's been really wide open, and it's exciting. I think for us, we know we haven't played our best hockey in conference, so excited for the second half push.
Yeah, I think you get a couple this weekend, Coach. You get to, what you said, you're 10-5-2. You wrap up the first half at 12-5-2. You would, I would think, be pleased with where you sit going into the break.
Yeah, I think you're happy with your record. You know, obviously we're not happy with our record in conference, but I think that, you know, we've kind of learned what it takes for us to be successful. We think we have a recipe now, and it's just doing it consistently.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, good luck this weekend. Hopefully, are the games sold out yet, or can we say there's still seats available at M&T?
No, there's a lot of seats available right now, I think, and, you know, especially on Saturday, what a cause and a chance to give back. So hopefully, you know, a bunch of people are out, especially if you can make Saturday, you know, bring a teddy bear and, you know, you can throw it at anyone you want once we score. So have some fun with that.
There you go. Josh, thanks so much, man. Appreciate you, and we'll talk soon. Good luck this weekend.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Josh.
Got it.
Thanks, Josh Algy, having a good season so far at Union. Well, we are back on location live at Dutch's Place on this Thursday. Hope you are well. We're giving away Giants tickets around 1:45. You get a register to win right here. Fill out a registration form. Come in. Fill out. If you don't want to be present to win, but you obviously to have any shot, you need to come in and join us at Dutch's Place. We have extended hours today. We're on until 2 o'clock, and it's officially lunchtime from now until 4. We'll run down the lunch specials for you, and we're hanging out on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team, and joined by the well-regarded Dr. Kyle Flick from Ortho New York.
Who, little Ortho report.
Little Ortho New York report. We've been loving on this all year long. And Dr. Flick, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon and happy holidays. How are you?
Yeah, we're
happy
good,
man. Happy holidays to you, Doc.
Busy as ever, Doc, cranking it out?
Yeah, we stay busy year-round.
no doubt about that.
Yeah, the ice didn't help last week, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Right?
Yeah.
That keeps you busy. And, and we're, you know, listen, I wanted to get you on because I watch again the NFL, and I watch Daniel Jones, who really, you know, the former Giants quarterback who went to Indy and was really piecing together a pretty nice season for him, and a non-contact injury and a torn ACL. It happens, Doc, time and time again.
Yes, it does. It's crazy. We're calling it, you know, it's like an illness out there. And it's just, you know, it's a shame because it's doing something that they do 1,000 times. And then the one time they do it for reasons we don't really always understand, it's just too much stress on the ligament and it goes.
Yeah. And there's nothing to prevent this, right? There's nothing you can do to prevent that from happening.
You really can't prevent ACL tears. There are some rehab or we call prehab programs that can reduce the incidence a little bit, especially in women soccer players. They've shown a lot of hamstring strengthening exercises. There's some things that you can do, you know, as far as proper footwear, that might eliminate some of these, but a lot of them are just kind of unexpected and not much you can do to be prepared for it.
Doc, I got some information from Sarah, of course, at Ortho New York, and she tells me that you were all over the United States men's hockey team last month. You served as the team physician for the under-18 hockey team of the 2025 U18 Five Nations tournament in Sweden, which is awesome. How was that experience like for you, Doc?
Oh yeah, that was a great experience for me. That was a highlight. You know, I've got a hockey background, so having the opportunity to just go with a team like that, it was great. There weren't any major injuries, which was nice. So I really just enjoyed the week, you know, hanging out with the players and the coaches and everything. That was really, really fun for me. It was a volunteer effort, as they all are at that level, but really a highlight for me for the year.
Well, and so, you played professional ice hockey in Europe, right, back in the day?
I played just a year after college in Germany, yes, I did.
How was that experience?
Yeah, I mean, that was fantastic. I was not expecting to play hockey after college, but it was, I don't know, I think it was 91, I know that, but it was just a year where there wasn't a lot going on in the economy, and I wasn't sure actually what I was going to do. I didn't decide to go to medical school yet. And so that opportunity just came up, and I've got family over there. So it was really a win-win for me to go for that year.
Do you have a favorite sport to cover and to be a part of? I mean, your resume is loaded here. What, you were with the White Sox, Chicago Bulls, Chicago Rush of the Arena Football League. I got Damon Ware of the Firebirds coming in here at 1 o'clock today. Is there a favorite sport that you've enjoyed covering more than the other?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the two sports that I participated in the most were ice hockey and lacrosse. So I really miss not having the Albany Firewolves in town. That's a real hit for me. I really enjoyed covering them. Those box lacrosse players are a lot like ice hockey players. So it's the mentality and the personality of the athlete that I really like the most. So hockey and lacrosse for sure are my favorites. Back when they were here, I enjoyed covering the Buzz, actually, the World Team Tennis, because that was just, that was exciting.
The
pro stuff that you mentioned, was just during my fellowship and residency when I was in New York City. We were helping with the Mets and the Giants, but those were really not as a head team physician, which is different. But I love it all, but hockey and lacrosse would be the two.
Dr. Flick, I know this might not be your area of expertise, but somebody just sent me a text and said, can you ask Dr. Flick how you handle back injuries in college athletics? And I sent them the return from me was backs can be pretty tricky, right?
Right. I was going to facetiously tell you I handle it by sending it to somebody else, but honestly, back injuries and spine injuries, cervical spine especially, can be very dangerous. So we're always, it's the one thing I really worry about the most if I'm covering a hockey game or a lacrosse game or a football game. You know, there's acute management of these injuries, which is one thing. And then it's another thing if you have a young person with chronic back pain. So back pain is incredibly common. Everybody gets back pain at some point in their life, especially in our age group. But if a young teenage or college athlete has back pain, it's really not normal, and it's really something that needs to be evaluated. So typically, if it's clearly muscular, which we can tell on our exam, it's usually just like anything else. It's rest and anti-inflammatories and probably some physical therapy. But if someone's having back pain for more than, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, then imaging is important. So starting with x-rays and figuring out if there's any, you know, bony issue, and then, you know, following up with an MRI if needed. So we have specialists that I work with here at Ortho New York that I usually refer those patients to.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Doctor.
Dr. Flick, we're here giving away Giants tickets at Dutch's Place, so I got to ask you a Giants-related question. We're a couple weeks and actually months removed from Cam Scataboo's gruesome injury.
Ugh.
He's been posting social media pictures. I guess, you know, knock on wood is, you know, full recovery for him, but it was pretty nasty. I'm sure you've seen it. You know, for compound fractures, I mean, we know the non-contacts are dangerous, but too, I mean, when the bone's out of the skin and it's a nasty break like Scataboo's was, what's the typical timetable for recovery? On that, Doc, I'm curious, and does it also depend on the severity of the break?
Right, so that's a great question, and honestly, even though it looks gruesome and you don't want to see the bone coming out of the skin poses increased risk for infection and things like that.
Right.
But honestly, the total return time may not be that much different than a closed fracture or one that does not come out of the skin. But the thing about a fracture dislocation like he had is long-term, there's also a higher risk for him to have arthritic changes in that ankle because when any joint dislocates, there's a lot of shear stress across the cartilage, which is the cushioning in the joint. And so there can be cartilage injuries that you wouldn't necessarily see if it was just a fibula fracture or a tibia fracture. So there's that added part to his injury that's a little bit of an unknown. But I would expect if he's doing well now that he should be okay, you know, for the start of next season.
He's one tough kid, I can tell you that. My goodness. Hey, I stand corrected here, too. I said that Jones was it was an Achilles, ACL. Yeah,
I wasn't sure because I know there was an ACL also, but I thought his was an Achilles injury, and that's nothing that we said is incorrect when talking about the Achilles injuries as well. I mean, we saw last year a handful of basketball Achilles ruptures, and we're seeing it in the NFL too. And it's, you know, a lot of those injuries are also an explosive push off, and you know these guys are getting stronger and stronger. And the tendinous portion of those muscles is not necessarily also getting stronger. So there's increased push and pull or stress across the Achilles. And, you know, so a lot of the basketball players are now, they're going up on a jump and they're just tearing their Achilles. And I think that's what happened to him. He must have come down on his leg or pushed off in a way that exceeded the strength of that muscle or that tendon. So, you know, similar to an ACL, we're seeing it a little bit more frequently now. No real great way to prevent it.
Yeah, and then there's the MCL, right, which doesn't necessarily require surgery. And it seems like if you end up with an MCL, you can get back on the playing field sooner than later.
Exactly. Yeah, the MCL is actually the one. You see a lot of the linemen, especially in college, most of the teams have all of their linemen wearing the knee braces. That's not for ACL. That has not been shown to prevent ACL injuries, but it does lower the incidence or the severity of an MCL injury. So, yeah, the MCL has a great capacity to heal on its own, so very rare that requires surgery. But it can still, a minor sprain can take a few weeks, but a more severe sprain can actually still take 6 to 8 weeks, which really could take somebody out of the season, depending, you know, when it happens.
Well, great information from Dr. Kyle Flick. Doctor, always a pleasure. Very popular when we get you on the show, and we appreciate a few minutes from you today.
My pleasure. Anytime. Have a happy holiday.
Same to you, Doc.
Too.
Thanks, Dr. Kyle Flick, extremely popular. I mean, all these ortho guys, they're like household names.
If you want to talk about an elite resume,
yeah.
I mean, wow. Hockey, I mean, everything. He's just a well-spoken guy. He gets it. Good interview every time with Dr.
Yeah, Bush. It's been a great partnership with Ortho New York, and I want to keep it rolling. Back on location at Dutch's Place, 462 Albany Shaker Road in Albany. Come out and join us. We're on the air until 2 o'clock today, and we're joined now by Coach Colleen Mullen for the Albany women's program. They're on a roll. They've won five in a row, coming off a win over Colgate just
six
the
in
other
a row.
Night. Six in a row? Is it up to six now?
Yeah, it is.
Six in a row. Is it 9-2?
8-2.
8-2. All right. 8-2. 8-2. Six
Hopefully
in a row.
9-2.
And BU coming to town on Saturday.
Taylor Swift Day, buddy.
2 o'clock. Taylor Swift. day at Broadview Center. Should be a good one. Coach Mullen, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing?
We're good.
We're good.
Congratulations on the winning streak. You keep it rolling here, and I was able to watch the game against Colgate, and you had a pretty good night shooting the three, at least one player in particular, right?
Yeah, I mean, currently she's sitting, and I got to knock on wood over here, number one in the country in three-point percentage. So pretty nice to have that on your team. So Laura Wangerman, however we say her name. But
Laura Wangerman.
She's really coming through big time.
Yeah, so she shot well, but who else on it? Who was
Delaney Hill?
Delaney Hill was 6 of 8.
Yeah, Delaney Hill was in the zone and 23 points, and just, I mean, she did everything in this game. I mean, she was getting to the basket, she was defending. You know, she had just a spectacular career night for herself, a career high. And you know, when you make 10 threes on the road, I think in back-to-back games we did. You know, just it puts a lot of pressure on the defense, and everybody's keying in on Amaya inside and our inside game, and it's really opening up our outside play. And luckily, we were able to knock down some big shots, and behind Delaney's great effort.
Yeah, and we talked about that last week when you joined us, Coach, that, you know, teams are going to be paying close attention to Amaya because of the start she had. They're going to double her, and who else is going to be able to step up and make some shots? And it seems like you've gotten some really good contributions from other players.
Yeah, it's been nice to see, you know, Martina, just, you know, she's a player that can impact the game on both ends. She played the other team's best player. We held her to 8 points and well under her average of 15, I believe. And, you know, her ability to just play every position, really, you know, she can bring the ball up. She's playing post. She can attack the rim. She's shooting the three better. And just, you know, everybody else stepping up in some of our players' absences. And, you know, with Anna East going down in the RPI game, she was, we haven't had her since RPI. So really figuring out the ball handling, trying to clean up our turnovers a little bit, but just such an unselfish team. Everybody's sharing the ball, moving the ball, and of course, you know, holding a team to 41 points is always nice when defense travels.
I was going to say, that segues right into my next question, Coach. How fitting, you know, you can sweep the road trip, you go 3-0, a couple of three-point victories, 1-0 OT over Bucknell, but you win by 14. You always say the defense travels, you win by more than 10 on the road, you only hold Colgate to 41. What did you see from your girls collectively out there defensively in the win over Colgate?
Yeah, just so bought into the scout. I mean, we had a very specific plan to shut down their starting their leading scorer, Ella Maybon, who is just a really dynamic guard that can post up, that has a terrific mid-range game. And we really just had a couple plays where we knew we were going to double her and make her try to feel uncomfortable, and they just executed that to a T. She got really frustrated, so I think that took them a little bit out of what they wanted to do in terms of some of their isolation plays and just their ability to really exploit some of our, you know, maybe a mismatch here and there. The biggest thing for us defensively is just, you know, the team defense that we play, the way that we play for, that the team just constantly just buys into that end of the floor. And, you know, those don't always come up on the stat sheet. Those aren't always the glory plays. But when you're on the road and you want to be 10 points better, like I say all the time, you know, your shots aren't always going to go down, but you can always count on your defense and hang your hat on that. And we have players that are just extremely bought into that, and they're strong and athletic and they're physical. So that certainly came into play to win three games on the road in a row. It's just a huge, huge road swing for us.
Yeah, big three games there for sure, Coach. And now you get a nice welcome home for the Taylor Swift Day and a matchup with BU. What's that look like on Saturday at 2:00?
It's huge. I mean, they start 6'5", 6'3", 6'2". They have got a ton of size. Being able to shut down their inside presence. So again, another defensive minded game, and the strategy of how we're going to handle that, you know, that type of size. But with that size, I think we're faster. So, you know, pushing the tempo and making those bigs get away from the basket a little bit. And I do think bringing, you know, Amaya and Gabby a little away from the basket, having them face up a little bit more, we can try to take advantage of maybe a speed advantage as opposed to a size advantage. And then offensively just continue to doing what we do best is, you know, pushing the ball in transition, moving the ball. You know, we assisted 14 of our 18 field goals against Colgate. They were, you know, 14 assists on 18 made field goals is, you know, a huge key stat for us. But again, we want to make sure that we're taking care of the ball, and BU will change up their defenses. We're most likely going to see some zone and some player to player, and we haven't seen zone, I think, since Marist. So we're going to have to get back to our zone sets here in practice. So dust off the zone offense and make sure that we're prepared and ready for whatever BU throws at us.
Sounds good, Coach. Keep up the winning streak, and good luck against BU, and we'll talk to you this time next week.
Great. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
Coach Colleen Mullen with us here on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team. We are back live on location at Dutchess Place on this Thursday. Roger Weiland with you, along with Michael Johnson Jr. Mike Palumbo is pumped in as well, and we're giving away Giants tickets today. We'll do that in about 45 minutes from right now, so I guess final call if you're out anywhere near 462 Albany Shaker Road in Albany, and a cozy spot called Dutch's Place, owned by our good friend Richie Cesnat. We have lower bowl Giants tickets to give away for the December 21st game, 1 p.m. kick at MetLife against the Minnesota Vikings. And that includes a parking pass. So it's a nice deal. They're really good seats, and we're giving them away. You have to register to win. We have a registration box set up. When you come in, just go to the back and fill out the registration form, and hopefully we'll draw your name at about 45 minutes from right now. In the meantime, we've asked Albany Firebirds head coach Damon Ware to join us for a few minutes, and he knows Dutch's Place pretty well. We've been here together before. Coach Ware, good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, too. Just excited. It's almost 2026, and get ready for another season.
I know. I mean, has it been a good off season for you? You win the championship, and hopefully you had some time to enjoy that.
No rest for me at all, really. You know, I got done with our season going undefeated. You know, I coach over at Hudson Valley Community College, and their offensive coordinator over there, so... run right over there, start working right again. Had another good season at HVCC, went 7-3 this year. So a lot of football this year, a lot of success, and, you know, just ready to do it all over again.
Can you take a breather during the holiday time, which is what we're in right now, maybe a little bit of time off?
Got to take a little bit of time off for the family. You know, they allowed me to keep this crazy schedule, so got to spend a little time with them. A little quick trip with the wife, and but other than that, like I said, it's still a busy time. Got a lot coming up here over the next couple of weeks, but just super excited to get ready for the season. I'm couldn't be more excited to go and defend being undefeated. It was a great season, and I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're gonna try to run that back, but the roster will change, right? You're in the process right now of figuring out what that roster looks like, and I assume it's not set yet.
Yeah, we're probably about 95% done.
Okay.
You know, that's the thing about this level is...
I mean, with
know,
a lot of the same guys that played last year coming back for you.
Yeah, we've got about 12 guys. You know, we only average about 7 and 8 guys that stay over each and every year. And so, you know, we've been to quite a few championships with very, very different teams, different quarterbacks, different players, different coaching staff. So at the end of the day, this business is a lot about change. It's a little bit more like junior college, so to speak, with all the changes that happen season to season. But we've signed a really, really good football team. All of our coaching staff is coming back, which that continuity is great. But we're really excited about this football team. I really, you know, every year I try to, you know, kind of hold back my excitement of the roster, but I really do think this roster could be even better than last year's roster.
Well, because you were high on last year's roster, and you weren't wrong. You went undefeated, you know, which was an amazing season. I guess you go right to the quarterback spot. I mean, Castronova moved on. What does that very important position in arena football look like for the Firebirds right now?
Yeah, losing somebody like Sam, who's at the top of his game, you know, obviously him getting a chance to go to the UFL is huge for him. It's life-changing for his family, and hopefully, you know, again, that breeds some success there as well. Right now we've got two quarterbacks, bringing back Robert McCoy, who was our backup to Sam last year. He will come in and compete for the starting job. And also, Fred Payton Jr., young man, out of Mercer. And,
okay.
We're real high on him. He's, got a little bit of experience. But we're again, he does a lot of really good things that I think, that can fit exactly what we do here, in Albany.
Now last year you had, you know, wide receiver wise, we talked right from the beginning of the year about this talented core of receivers that you have. What does that position look like, and how many of those receivers will be coming back this year?
Yeah, you know, the crazy part about success, and, you know, a lot of people don't talk about this at any level, really, is when you have success, your players are going to move on, and it's either by people paying them more money, it's whatever happens, or them getting opportunities to move up. And so a good part of our offense moved on, you know, to a higher level this year. So two of our receivers, Duane Brown and Isaiah Scott, you know, both also went to the UFL as well. So we had to retool. Darian Townsend will come back. You know, he's our emotional leader. He's been our leader in our room the last couple of years. So again, just a great, you know, consummate professional. But it's his time to shine. You know, every year somebody steps up, and I think it's his time to kind of come in and take a number one role. But, you know, our receiving core is just phenomenal. You know, we brought in a kid, Tyrese Chambers, kid that played at FIU in Maryland. He is just a phenomenal receiver. Super excited to get him in. I think he reminds me a lot of Duane Brown from last year, so we're real excited to get him in. Markel Wade is signed back. Obviously, he's been our best return guy over the last 5 years. So he's coming back. He's just got phenomenal speed. He gets better. He's like wine. He just gets better with age. So he'll be back. But we signed, you know, Donovan Ali, a kid out of Washington State, and played at Colorado State. He's a big guy, 6'4 target. I think he's going to do phenomenal with us. Also, Alfonso Taylor, kid that actually started as a defensive back at Arizona State, but just a phenomenal receiver. He played in another league last year, had a phenomenal year. We're really excited about bringing him in and just his diversity. So, and then I just signed another kid. We just haven't announced him. It'll be next week. Another kid that's played some in the NFL. We've also got him done, and we're just getting all the stuff done with the league.
NFL guy?
Yeah, and so he'll get announced. A wide receiver. So our wide receiver room is going to be stacked like it was last year. It's going to be a whole lot of fun, obviously, going through camp and finding out, you know, our top four or five guys that can help us win a championship. So we won't miss a beat. You know, it's my favorite time of year, just recruiting. Finding the guys that can help us win another championship is the funnest part of the year. So we're really looking forward to what camp has in store for us in 2020.
And as much as we talk about the offense, which is obviously a big part of arena football, right, there's a lot of points put up on the board. You probably took more pride than anything last year of what you were able to do on the defensive side of the ball. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Coach Ware, but I thought your defense last year played a huge role in helping you win a championship and stay undefeated.
Yeah, absolutely. We, you know, there, you finally come to an idea of really what it is that your team, you know, you want it to look like. And you know, for the last, you know, the 4 years prior, we've been number one in offense, but we've been lower it, you know, down the totem pole in defense. And so that was really something that I wanted to invest in. I really, you know, kind of took over that role as a real important piece is, you know, in 2024, we lost in the championship. I watched the number one defense, and, you know, every game, they just were there. And that just, those extra possessions and all those things really help you in this game where every possession means so much. And so going number one in defense this year was really, you know, just a really important piece of what we want to be. And so once you do it, you just need to keep doing it. And so, you know, we're going to change quite a few pieces on the defense, but I think we've got better, and it's going to start up front is, you know, getting after quarterbacks, you know, bringing a kid, Kadir Shepherd, out of Ole Miss, that's had a little bit of CFL time. I think he's a phenomenal player. Akeem Smith out of Sam Houston State. We brought in Freddie Booth Lloyd that had been one of the best defensive linemen in the league over the last couple of years, always in top couple in sacks. You know, I think he could be a wild card. Brought back Prince Eumann Mielen, the kid that came in and played late for us, had the huge, you know, sack in the championship game.
Yeah.
You know, he's coming back. We just signed a kid, Quillian Felton, out of University of Nebraska Kearney, that was up for Defensive Player of the Year. We got some really, really good talent that's coming through the door. Super excited about these guys and getting after the quarterback. Bringing in, you know, Chizzy Umanakwe, you know, a linebacker that's coming out of Central Connecticut. Bringing back Drew Singleton, that obviously played, you know, for us last year and played for Michigan and Rutgers. We just really have some really, really good players from some really good schools. And, you know, again, we're starting to become that destination that if you want to try to move up, this is a place that you can certainly develop yourself and get an opportunity to move up. So,
well, it sounds like you're not going to miss a beat defensively.
Correct.
Well, what you just rattled off, sure. We're talking with Damon Ware, head coach of the Albany Firebirds, live with me on location here at Dutch's Place on this Thursday. Can you stick around for one more quick segment?
Absolutely.
All right. Come back. I want to get in to the league and then to the schedule and hopefully some Saturday home dates, which I'm hearing there's going to be plenty of those. More with Coach Ware when we come back on location, Dutch's Place, on a Thursday on ESPN Radio 104.5 The Team. We are back. We're at Dutch's Place, coming up on the giveaway time, about 1:45-ish giveaway. The tickets, we'll do it in-house here, and then we'll also announce it on the air. Giants and Vikings tickets. If you're anywhere near 462 Albany Shaker Road, you want to pop in and throw your name into the entry box and have a chance to win Giants Viking tickets for December 21st, you still have time to do that. All right, Coach Ware with us here from the Albany Firebirds, off season, but it won't be long. When does camp begin, Coach?
Camp will start in mid-March.
Mid-March, and the season will be, that gets rolling right in, is it late April or early April?
It'll be mid-April.
Mid-April.
We're getting ready to do the schedule reveal for the league, so that's some exciting stuff coming up very soon.
Gotcha, okay. In terms of the league, what can you tell us? Where you know, last year, you know, last couple years, it's been, you know, a couple teams drop out, a couple teams come in. As you sit here in the middle of December, do you think the league is set and the teams are set?
Yeah, you know, anytime you start a business, it's there's going to be the growing pains. I mean, everybody goes through it. It's just you got to learn from your mistakes and learn quickly. And so, you know, we had a couple challenges. Obviously, 2024 wasn't, you know, under our direction. It was under another, and so can't really count that. But last year, every team that started the season finished, and that's obviously an important thing for professional sports. And so
it's still AF1, right?
And so, yes. And so, you know, going into this year, the earnest of the league is vetting the proper people, getting the proper people in that have the wherewithal, that have the business sense. It's not just having the money, it's having some business savvy too. And so, you know, everybody that'll be announced obviously coming in the league this year there's been plenty of due diligence and plenty of vetting, and I'm super excited. There's a lot of good coaches that are coming back, and you know that we're on the right, you know, path here to getting back to the stardom of this, and all we got to do is just keep taking care of business on and off the field, and I think the rest will be just fine.
How many teams are there? I mean, do you think there'll be?
I think there's going to be 9.
Okay.
So 9, I think that's going to be it. I think there was a possibility of a 10th, but I think the final, the, you know, amount of teams will be 9.
Who's new?
The teams that have been announced that were new were Michigan Arsenal, playing out of Saginaw.
Okay.
Good owner, got an experienced coach up there. I think that'll be fun. We brought in, you know, Beaumont that came from another league that won the championship last year. That's going to be an exciting addition. They've got some good players. They've got a solid coach, you know, so I think that's going to be a great addition. We brought in Minnesota, that also was a champion of another league as well. They've got, you know, an experienced coach. They've got very good players as well. So super excited to get them, on the schedule this year. You know, Kentucky is newish, you know, he had been part of another team for a short time, but took over his own team in Kentucky. They've got, you know, Coach Walker, obviously an experienced coach, so can't really consider them a new team, but a newer team. So, and then all the people that returned from last year. So we've got, like I said,
is Nashville back?
Nashville's back. Just like I said, that, you know, that's a
Orlando's not, right?
Orlando's not. Yeah, they went out last year, and that was
they were always a staple. But I know they went out last year, and they're not coming back this year.
Exactly.
Well, so you're going to have some competition, right? Because you were,
I mean, championship game was close, right? What's that final score, right?
Three-point game. Yep.
But other than that, you, for the most part, rolled through that league last year.
I mean, we had some challenging games. I'm not going to say we just ran through it, but you know, I said.
But you won convincingly.
We took care of business.
You did. You can't win that easily all the time, right? I would assume that, what I'm trying to make is that some of these teams out there, they know how good you are.
Yeah.
They've tried to upgrade their roster too, so they can make this a little bit more competitive.
I think that's the best thing is.
Well, I think we all want that. You want that.
Right. The talent to spread out, it's, you know, going through the signings of everybody that's been announced so far. I mean, it's been a phenomenal group of people. So the talent is spread out. Anytime you can go undefeated, if you're any type of organization, you're going to look at that and say, what are they doing that we're not doing? And so, that there's been an upgrade of coaching staffs. There's been an upgrade of budgets. There's been an upgrade. And so again, to compete, you're going to have to do all the little things on and off the field. And so we're just a really good place that's done it right. And we've got a lot of experience doing it. And that's tough to beat. And so, you know, right now it's time for everybody to do what they need to do off the field so on the field can be more successful. This will be a much more competitive season with the coaches here, with the new additions in, with a lot of the players that are signing all over the place. I think this will be more competitive. But, you know, again, we want to prove that we're the standard. We want to prove that we're the top of the food chain. And like they say, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And we're going to keep giving everybody everything they got. And we just, like I said, I told somebody before, I feel addicted to that feeling of not having to lose a game. And that was a great feeling to go through a season, all the ups and downs, the adversities, but maintain that dominance. That's a great feeling.
Yeah, well, it's unprecedented, right? I mean, that doesn't happen. I mean, you don't see somebody go start to finish and not lose a game, but you were able to do that last year. I'm a big stickler on attendance because I've been here 40 years. So I was here for glory days and I was here not that long ago when there were a lot of people that would go to an Albany Firebirds game. And then, you know, we had the craziness of Antonio Brown. And then now we really have a really solid group of owners, as you know, and Jeff Levack as the team president and does a great job. And I'm just hoping that we see an increase in numbers this year, which leads me to my next question. I know you are unveiling the schedule and all of that, but in talking with Levack last week, it sounds like with the Firewolves gone, it's going to open up some more Saturday night games at MVP Arena. What can you share with us on that?
Yeah, majority of our games will obviously be on Saturdays, and that's a huge thing. Is we've always known we're a Saturday night team. We've dabbled with these games on the other nights, on Thursdays and Fridays and Sundays, and they just aren't as successful here. And so we're a blue-collar Saturday night, you know, don't have to do anything on, you know, Sunday, early Sunday morning. That's our crowd. We want block parties here. So, you know, we knew that as an organization, and so it's tough when you have two tenants in a building that are both playing professional sports. And, you know, when they start earlier, they get the dates a little earlier than we get our dates. And so that was tough to manage. But, you know, like I said, you know, congrats to them of finding another home and moving on. And so now we're the main tenant. And that helps us tremendously. And so not only, you know, do they leave that open hole of a lot of their fans that want exciting things to do on the weekends. And so, you know, we've had a great deal of support from some of their fans of coming and being season ticket holders of us. So there's a lot of good things. Obviously, you never want to lose a team in an area, but it definitely helps us in the long run.
Exciting, man. I'm looking forward to it. I'm a big fan of arena ball because I know the popularity that it has been and can continue to be here in the 518. And you put together a championship roster, so it's fun to cover your teams. And in a way, we go here before too long. But thanks for joining us here at Dutch's Place. I know Richie says that's happy that you stopped by today. One of the owners who owns this and owns a part owner of the Firebirds, and Richie also owns Scoop's Ice Cream right down the street. So Damon, good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, good to see you.
We'll do a lot more of this throughout the course of the year. Damon Ware with us here on Big Board Sports.